Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big L.A. welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide blog talk radio network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. It sounds so nasty. We have an exciting show planned for you today. Ellen Nielsen, a marketing and communications consultant based in Alberta, Canada. Yes, she's Canadian. She was also a caregiver to two parents with dementia at the same time. Wow. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. Like I said, I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial. Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, but they are also very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, please learn a lesson from the airlines, would you? Remember, every time you board a plane, you automatically tune them out. So when they start to tell you that if there's an emergency in the unlikely event and your oxygen mask falls from the ceiling, to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask, you know. And the reason they tell you all this is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then you won't be of any help to anybody with anything. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Another ouch. Unfortunately, guess what? The only way out of the grief process, you have to go through the grief process. Can't go around it. Can't go over it, can't go under it, you got to go through it. So hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you are stuck. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show, and my radio podcasts, and my books, and my videos, and my blog. I know, it kind of sounds like it's all about me, but it's not. It's all about you, actually. So just go to my website, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com. That's the name of the show, too. Or I made a shortcut for you people with short memories. It's called DaveNass.com. That's Dave and then Nancy, Apple, Sam, Sam. DaveNass.com. Simple. When you go to my website, you will want to take my short quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout? And guess what? Just for doing that, I'm going to send you a free link to my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. It's about my amazing wife's story. And mine, of course, because I'm married to her. And guess what? It's still getting rave reviews on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So please don't miss out on this very informative quiz. It will assess where you are in the burnout process. And the best part is you get my book absolutely free just for doing that. Amazon is still selling for almost $10, so it is a great value. Hey, I want to take this moment to thank my guests last week. Never Give Up, a caregiver's post-traumatic stress disorder success story, PTSD. Tanya and Rick Shaw, United States Marine Corps, how this amazing woman saved her family and her marriage when he was suicidal, was going to end it all. You got to listen to this show. All these podcasts are recorded. You can go to my website, DaveNass.com, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com. Either one will work. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guests now, if I can find my unmute button. There it is. Ellen, are you there?
I am here.
Oh, I love it when the guest is there waiting and I don't have to go hunting for them, especially if they're Canadian. All right, enough with the Canadian jokes. Ellen, why don't we get started by you telling us a little bit about yourself. Just who was Ellen Nielsen before she became a caregiver?
I became a marketing and communications consultant, and I've worked for various different organizations, including the Park Service and various large companies and so on. And I currently work from home. That helped me through the caregiving process because it allowed me a lot of flexibility in my time, but it also made it hard to actually work sometimes and get work done. But yeah,
that's me.
I'm in Albertan. I live in Edmonton.
Edmonton, is that like on the left side or the right side of the country?
It's just about directly north of Phoenix by 3 hours plane flight.
Okay, I got it now. So you sound like a very important person, like you were smart and stuff.
I guess so. It's hard to answer that. I'm an average person who grew up and got an education and developed a career and moved away from home and so on, and then had reasons to be spending a lot of time back at home.
Okay, and you sound very humble because I threw you a curveball there. You didn't know how to respond. Well, let's talk about what the circumstances that led to you becoming a caregiver, the most important job in the world, right?
Yes. I would say I basically fell into the job. I was living 3 hours away. I was living 3 hours away from my parents. Dementia is a funny thing. Just little things that start going off and don't make sense. You know, I would make a phone call and there'd be some story about people breaking into the house or something stolen that didn't normally get stolen, like pots and pans or trips to within a half hour where my brother lived, but they didn't go and see my brother. It just didn't make sense. Like, why would you do that? So gradually I had to start spending more time with my parents I'm calling it at home. So I had to spend more time at home trying to figure things out and trying to find solutions. And it wasn't an easy process. Getting a diagnosis is sometimes very challenging, and it was my mom who was worse than my dad, and so we sort of started with her, but the thing about people with dementia is they're not necessarily stupid. Sometimes they are very good at answering the questions that are supposed to be designed to assess them. So there is things like, you know, what time is it on the, look at this clock and tell me what time it is. Repeat back this word to me and things like that. And she wasn't bad at doing those things, so it was hard to get a diagnosis. So how I fell into it, you know, it was just slowly having to take more time trying to figure out what was happening because things weren't making sense. I made a decision at a certain point that if it were me, I would want someone who is very patient and who cared a lot about figuring it out. And so that's how I became a caregiver.
I see. Good advice to give people. Patience. Well, how did you initially adapt to this role of caregiver? I mean, did it just come naturally? Did you find out you were a natural, or was it difficult? Are you still learning?
That's a difficult thing to answer. Did it come naturally? I would say I was probably poorest adapter possible. There was a lot of tough decisions. There was a lot of opposition. There was a lot of stress. It felt really hard to find support, even in the medical community. If I were to describe my initial experiences with caregiving, I would describe it as being dragged down the street, my fingernails dug into the pavement until they were bleeding. That was my initial experience.
And most people, I would assume, that's an excellent way of describing it. So have you healed from all those bruises and scratches and contusions?
Yes, I would say I have. When I was thinking about it in preparation for this interview, I found that thinking about some of the things I went through did bring up the same feelings and so on. But I would say, yes, I've healed from that part of it.
Well, that's good. And only scars remain, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sure you had some hard decisions that you had to make while you were caregivers. Why don't you think back down memory lane and what were some of the hardest decisions that you had to make and how did you make them?
Well, of course, there were the decisions of care and eventually end-of-life decisions also. That's the most obvious. But there was also things that if you were think about caregivers, or at least if I thought about caregivers, the type of caregiving that I had to do, that is with dementia and elderly issues, there were things that I never would have imagined. It was simple things like actually getting a diagnosis, and also your own reaction to what's happening. You see it happening, but you don't want it to be happening. You want things to stay the same. And then there's fighting against the system that also doesn't seem to always want to help figure it out. They were setting things up like Meals on Wheels. You know, they were still in their own home at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were setting things up like Meals on Wheels. And then they didn't like the fact that they had to pay for this. This was a lot of money. And so then they would cancel it. And, you know, you were the one who set it up, but they're the one that canceled it. There was dealing with scammers. There were people who, I don't know how they find seniors, but they do. They manage to find them. There was a housing contractor who talked them into signing a big contract because their roof was going to fall in pretty soon and paying a bunch of money. And I was home one day and the doorbell rang. And of course, it's not my house, so I didn't answer the door. They went and answered it. And I could hear this person saying, you know, you got to deal with this. You got to go to the bank and you got to get the money and you got to do it fast because, you know, it's not right. And this, you've got to pay for the help that we've given you because otherwise your roof would have fallen in. I'm sitting there listening to this. Then when I walk to the door, they go, oh, are you the one that's the police officer? Because I have a cousin who's a police officer, right? No. So there was those kind of things. And then figuring out, my parents didn't know what contract they'd signed or what the deal was. There was conflicting stories. They said confusing things about what had happened. And so it was trying to track down what was the truth when it was pretty obvious that some scam had gone down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then once they were in care, so moving on to other types of things, they didn't agree to being in care. They didn't want to be in care. So there was runaways, and there was taking them back, and then there was runaways again, and there was trauma, and there was tears,
wow.
And there were threats. And then once they were actually settled in and sort of staying there, there was dealing with their house and all their possessions and knowing the story behind everything and having to figure it out, like deal with all the stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bit hoarded. The house was a bit hoarded because they didn't have the ability to make decisions anymore. So a lot of stuff was kept that shouldn't be kept. It was just going through that whole process of figuring out those very concrete things that are not easy to figure out. I heard a description of dementia once, which I think applies. It's that you have a live body still to deal with, but the person has actually passed, and you don't know when it happened, but you still have this body there.
Very good assessment. Well, listen, let's take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk about some more stuff. So I don't want anyone to go away. We will be right back in a couple of minutes, so don't go away. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You will be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy,
A like Apple, S like Sam, slikesam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's NASS. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we're back with Ellen Nielsen, amazing caregiver. So Ellen, thank you again for coming on this show. You are amazing. I wanted to ask you, you said elsewhere that being a caregiver turned you into a car thief, and we actually used that in the heading, which a lot of people thought was really funny. Oh my gosh, so caregiver and a car thief, it's like my dementia and my parent helped me to become a caregiver and a car thief. I think that's what we call the show. Tell us about it, how that action made you realize the true meaning of love, and just explain what all that means.
I had car trouble one time, and my mom came to pick me up. It was obvious that she was not driving properly. She was changing lanes without looking and stopping at green lights and going through red lights. Yeah. I realized this is pretty serious. I actually initiated the action that had my mom's doctor take away her license. But the thing is,
did that help?
You maybe don't have a license, but that doesn't mean you don't actually have the actual license in your wallet. And it doesn't mean you don't have the car and the keys.
Right. So, it's a very common problem. You take away the license, they're still driving. Take away the keys, they got a spare set of keys. So that's serious. So what happened?
As I said, I was 3 hours away. I thought long and hard about this. I knew from my experience where she came and picked me up that there was a valid reason the doctor decided to take a walk, and I had actually initiated that. The amount of discussing it with her or them would create, change.
Yeah.
Or change the situation. The person to not be able to drive, but at the same time, it's the right thing.
Sure.
I just realized at a certain, I had a kind of a hard talk with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that if my mom drove over your child or your spouse or your anything, I would never be able to forgive myself. Never.
Wow.
In fact, it would be so traumatic to me that I would have to consider suicide.
Yep.
And that was we don't want to go there. So the thing is to take action now before she does it, right? Before someone is lost or hurt. Or got up early and I got on the bus and I went to Calgary where they lived. I took them out for lunch and they loved going for drives. So we went for an afternoon drive and enjoyed the afternoon.
Who was driving, you home. Or them?
Me driving. Yeah, me driving. They were happy to let me drive. So we went out for the afternoon and everything. And then at the end of the day, I said to mom, hey, I don't have a way to get back to Edmonton. Could I borrow your car? And of course, she's a mother. So of course, there's no problem. There's no problem at all. You need the car. The car is yours. And she even cleaned it all up for me. And I watched her drive it out of the garage. And I watched it knowing that this was the last time she was going to ever drive again. Which is, you're grieving it, right? You know what's going down, and you're grieving it at the same time. So
premeditated, huh? That's why you took the bus?
Premeditated crime.
Well, you really are a car thief, aren't you? Premeditated, okay.
And I blatantly got in the car and drove off with it.
That is fantastic. There are so many people out there listening who have to do that, because I can't tell you how many times they know that their parents shouldn't be driving. They know that the license has been taken away. But a lot of times, dementia people can get very agitated, very nasty, and very stubborn and rebellious. And they say, I just don't know what to do. I just don't know what to do. Well, you're the first person who ever admitted to being a car thief to their dementia parents. So congratulations. I mean, whatever it takes, right? Because something is going to happen. My mother was driving. She has dementia. It was very difficult for her to stop driving. I tried to get the doctor to take away her license, but that didn't work out. So when she finally had an accident, she almost killed somebody, that's when she finally admitted to me, you know, I think I hit the gas pedal instead of the brake. So she kind of got afraid.
Yeah.
And so fortunately, she says, maybe I shouldn't be driving anymore. So yes, that's right. You shouldn't be driving anymore. But some people are not that understanding. So I am so glad that you said that, because so many people out there, you need to become car thieves. So listen to this woman. She knows what she's talking about. Okay, I interrupted you, so just proceed where you left off.
Okay, so I drove home with the car, and I drove home crying the whole way. It actually didn't take very long before they realized what had happened. It's interesting. It's interesting because sometimes they're totally with it and they understand and they figure things out. And other times, the most simplest thing they can't figure out. But in this case, it didn't take long before they figured out that the car wasn't coming home again. And so.
And how long did it take? A couple of weeks?
I don't think it was even that long. Maybe a week. I have to give you the background that my dad was a pastor, retired, of course, and that meant made my mom a pastor's wife. People that are very caring and would never do anything to break the law or, you know, be illegal or not right. But dementia is a funny thing, right? So
sure.
I explained the fact about my dad being a pastor also because I started getting like dozens of every single day, like messages left for me. I was actually working on a contract at that time away from home, so I would come home every night and there'd be a couple dozen messages telling me that I was a bad daughter and that I was going to hell and God was going to take care of this.
Wow.
I listened to all these messages also crying. At a certain point, I realized that this is what is the true meaning of love. It's when you do something to help another person, even though that person doesn't want it. And even though there's very few people who will help you do it, and even though it's so painful to yourself to do it, and you don't even want to do it, that is love.
And some people call it tough love.
Yes. It's tougher on the person giving it than probably the person receiving it.
Yes. The old, this is going to hurt me more than it hurts you argument, right?
Yes.
That's funny. Well, listen, there's a lot of tough choices involved in caregiving. As you know, as I know, I'm a caregiver to my wife and I'm a caregiver to my mother. So I'm kind of the sandwich generation, right? I got a slice of bread on both ends. Fortunately, all my kids are old enough. Otherwise, I'd be a club sandwich generation. You know, were there any benefits or joys to being a caregiver? I mean, when all is said and done, because you're not a caregiver anymore. So as you look back, what were the benefits? What were the consequences? What were the joys? What were the heartaches? I mean, just reflect a moment.
Initially, there wasn't any joy in the process. I wouldn't have given it up. I wouldn't have not done it, but it was really tough. Later, when things were sort of sorted out and they were in care and they'd stopped running away, I figured out ways to enjoy spending time together and learning how to nurture my parents and how to be present in the moment. There was joy in that. There was joy in being able to just think up something to do together that would be fun and enjoyable and create a memory, maybe not an actual memory because with dementia, you don't necessarily have memories, but memory that, a heart memory maybe, a sense that we were together and we were spending quality time together and we were enjoying the moment.
Yes,
so,
in fact, I read in this book, let me just interject for a moment. It's called Having a Moment with your caregiver, with your dementia or your Alzheimer's patient. And it's that their mind gets younger and younger and younger. And it's not that they don't recognize children anymore or whatever. It's just that in their mind, they're seeing them younger and younger because the more recent memories are disappearing. So when they think of their daughter now, maybe they're seeing in their mind a 12-year-old girl who hasn't even reached puberty yet. So when they see this grown lady, well, so who are you? They've done studies where they can actually, if the caregiver is behind a door and they're knocking on the door and they say, "Hey, Mom, it's me. Open up, please." They can recognize the voice because voices don't change that much. But as soon as the door opens, it's like, "Well, who are you? I thought you were my, you said you were my daughter. Who are you?" And so it really helps to have moments with them. Maybe you bring, "Hey, remember when we were kids, we used to build tents out of blankets in our room and this and that," and then all of a sudden the light goes on in her eyes. Yes. And for the next 30 or 60 seconds, she's right there with you, sharing a laugh, and then it's gone. So what happened? You guys just enjoyed a moment. And if you can have as many moments as possible, that moment will stay with them, even if they don't even remember. It subconsciously stays with them. They'll feel warm and happy and fuzzy about it. And they probably don't even know why they feel warm and happy and fuzzy, because they had a moment, but they've long forgotten the moment, but they're still feeling good from the moment. So I thought that was interesting as I read that in a Alzheimer's book. But that kind of sounds like what you're explaining, living in the moment.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Yes, that's exactly it.
Mostly joys, then, I would say, to be a caregiver once you get it under control. Because, you know, we're all thrown into it. It's not written on our resume. We didn't interview for the job. We didn't accept voluntarily. It's like one day you're a normal person, and the next minute you're this thing called a caregiver. And it's that quick. And if any other thing that would happen that quick, we would suck at it for a while until we got our rhythm. So now,
there did come a time when there was a rhythm. There did come that time.
People who are listening, there is hope. If you're a brand new caregiver and you want to kill yourself already, just be patient. It does get better if you're doing all the right things. Now, if you're not doing all the right things, if you're unorganized and you're not seeking help, you're not getting support, you're not figuring out how to do this and get a rhythm, then it's going to suck for a long time. So you've got to figure out how to make this work, because there are ways to make it work. There are government agencies to help out financially. There are facilities that perhaps you should put them in. Because everyone says, no, I'm never going to put my parents in a facility. But never say never, because one day you will have to put them in a facility. And it's true, there are a lot of bad facilities out there that you wouldn't put your dog in, but there are quite a few good ones too. You just have to look for them like the needle in the haystack. So now, Ellen, both your parents have passed, right?
Yeah.
And that makes you an ex-caregiver. So how has this new role affected you?
Well, this was one of the interesting things that happened, because Mom passed in 2003 and my dad passed in 2013. So it took
10 years,
you know. Well, and then there was the time before that where where the thing was happening, it hadn't been resolved and so on. So there was like 15 years of caregiving.
Mm-hmm.
And what
that's
was
a long, that's a long tour of duty.
That's a long tour of duty.
I've been doing it for 19 years so far. So we're veterans, aren't we?
Yeah. So the interesting thing was that after my father passed, he being the second parent, there was the grief of the loss of both my parents, but there was also the grief of the loss of the role of caregiver. My whole life had started revolving around managing this huge thing, and I finally found, or over the process, I found ways to actually make it work and to enjoy the process. And then all of a sudden, it was over.
As quickly as it started, it was over.
And there was shock. There was knowing, who the heck am I if I'm not dealing with this thing?
That's
who
right.
Who am I? I don't even know who I am.
Wow. Yep. That is so common. It's like for 15 years, your identity was so wrapped up in being a caregiver. And yes, it came on you unexpectedly, but you finally got used to it. You finally found your rhythm. And now as quickly as it came, it was as quickly taken away. You had to figure out, well, now what do I do? So many caregivers go into depression after their care receiver dies, because it's like, they just don't know what to do. They don't, you know, now there's no reason to get out of bed, no reason to change their clothes, no reason to shower. It's like they go into this serious depression. So what did you do to get through that? Because you seem like you're kind of through it now.
Well, actually, I'm not completely through it, but I'm through the initial shock.
And how long ago did it happen?
My dad is just over 2 years since my dad passed.
Okay.
I would say there was two stages to this. One was the initial stage, which was the grieving the loss of my father and the shock of not knowing who I was without being a caregiver, and the shock of grieving the loss of the caregiver role as much as the loss of the actual person.
So it's like losing a job.
I worked hard to create ways to connect and to have moments together and enjoy the hard path, as hard as it was. Suddenly it wasn't there, and I realized that I found ways to enjoy the path. So that was the first part of it. And then there's a second part, which is trying to recreate your life. I had to plan every holiday and I had to think, everything I did, I had to think, how was that going to affect what I did with my parents? How was I going to plan this around the fact that I got to do this with my parents, or I got to take care of that, or I got to make sure this is covered? I'm still figuring out the second part.
Now, in all of this, you haven't mentioned anything about siblings. Do you have any?
I have one brother, as is common with many children of people with dementia. Usually one child is the one that steps up. Usually it's a girl, but not necessarily, but usually it is. And usually it's only one child who steps up and the other one takes a back seat. And that was the way it happened with us too.
Has this affected your relationship with your brother? Some people, have resentments when they don't step up. Some people just realize it's a common thing and it's, he wouldn't be a good caregiver anyway or whatever.
I did have some resentment and I did feel some not being supported and not appreciating having to make all the decisions on my own. At this point, I think we're okay. My brother is actually living with me right now. He and his wife are living with me. We're not estranged or anything, but it was tough having to carry the load alone. Mm-hmm. And I wish that if there's anybody who's listening who's not the primary caregiver, I would encourage them to find ways to step up. Maybe you can't handle it to the same extent as the person who's the primary caregiver, but find ways to take the load a little bit off, even if it's taking an afternoon with the person so that the primary caregiver can go and do something fun or something relaxing or something for themselves, or find a way to take a part of the decision-making, what happens with the house. Just something. Find ways to take something. Maybe you can't step up to the same extent. Maybe there's circumstances, other family members or whatever that you're looking after, or a job or whatever. But just, find a way, please.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I was muted. We're going to take a break because your Skype is starting to break up, and I think I want you to call back on the other cordless line that you had before, and we'll see if that's better. So we'll be right back. Bye-bye.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m., Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassar.
And we are back with Ellen Nielsen. And we had to take a break because her Skype was breaking up. But Ellen, talking about how, for those out there who have siblings who maybe don't step up to the bat for whatever reason, maybe they live far away, maybe they just are not the right temperament to be a caregiver, there's still a lot of things they can do, isn't there? They can come over for a couple hours so you can go take a Starbucks break. They can come over for maybe an hour while you take a hot Calgon take me away moment bath, or if they're feeling really brave, maybe a day so you can maybe go to the beach or go to a movie with a friend. And that just means so much, these little tiny respites. Can you imagine working a job, a 16-hour-a-day job with no breaks, no lunch, no nothing? So, I mean, it doesn't take much. I understand some people don't have a temperament for caregiving. They don't have patience. They don't have all of the qualities, empathy, sympathy. Doesn't come naturally. I get that. It means so much. You still have a part to play. It's to be that respite, even a 10-minute break. I mean, if you want to get ridiculous here, to have a sandwich, anything would be better than nothing. Would you agree?
Yes, I agree. And there's also things like maybe there's a part of all the decisions that have to be made that
good
person
point.
Can take over. Like with my parents, we still had their house. Maybe there's the renting of the house or the
sure.
cleaning out of the house. You know, which isn't the direct caregiving, but it's still part of the process.
Yeah, great point. Great point. And the sibling might be very good at financial stuff, and they say, oh, yeah, I could do that. Worst case scenario, if there's nothing they can do, they're not talented in any situation, and they really don't have the time, or they live far away, send money. That way I can, call this organization.
Money.
Yeah, send money. And it doesn't have to be a lot of money, just anything so that I can hire the next door neighbor to babysit for 2 hours while I go do something. Or there's this place called Visiting Angels that they will actually send a caregiver for the day or do house cleanup. Or just, there's so many different creative ways. So hopefully we touch some hearts of siblings out there. Thank you for bringing that up. That was a great, great thing to bring up. I don't know if you've answered this or not, Ellen, but is there anything that you learned about caregiving? I know you mentioned some things that existing caregivers maybe haven't learned. The same question for ex-caregivers. So
okay.
If you've answered it, fine. If you have other things you want to add to that, go right ahead.
I think I have some things to add. For existing caregivers, one that seems obvious but isn't always necessarily obvious when you're doing it, is that if you step up when you need to step up, as imperfectly as you need to do it, but the best you can, you won't have regrets later.
The pain of regret is a terrible pain,
yeah.
isn't it?
You can't do anything about it after it's over. Do it
good
now.
Point.
It might be tough. You might have difficulties doing it correctly or perfectly, but
mm-hmm.
as long as you've done the best you can possibly do, as long as you stepped up, you won't have regrets later. And that's really important. The second thing is that it is going to make you stronger. That's kind of hard to imagine when you're going through this whole process. Some of the tough times when you just don't want to go ahead, but you have to because there's no choice. And when you're making decisions where there's no good decision, it is going to make you stronger in the end. That's one thing that I learned having come out at the end, is
sure.
I'm a stronger person. And then another thing is, as hard as it is, as awful it is as it is, it's quite possible you're going to miss it after it's over. And it might leave a huge hole in your life that you never could have imagined, a hole so big that it might be hard to go on. So it's important to remember that. You're in a tough place and you wish it wasn't happening, you wish it was over. But remember, when it's over, you might wish you were back there. So it's kind of take advantage of being there even though it's tough.
Excellent advice. Basically, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, and appreciate it now because one day you might miss it. Never thought of that before. Absolutely true. So in what way, Ellen, have you found the transition to, quote, not a caregiver, unquote, as challenging as being a caregiver was?
Well, some of this I've already touched on, mm-hmm. which was, of course, there was initially the grief and not knowing what was going to come next or what was next and mm-hmm. who I was independent of caregiving. There was also not really knowing how to get back into life. Like, I know what my interests are, but sometimes it's hard actually moving forward on those interests. It's like everything is now open. I don't have to base all my decisions of what I do with my life around this whole huge thing. But now I don't really know what to do. I know what all my interests are, but it's hard to sometimes go forward. And part of it is physical. You don't realize how exhausting and the whole process was. And it takes a while to get through that and get some energy back. But then part is also psychological. So you're stronger and weaker at the same time. And I'm still going through this, so I don't totally know all the answers yet, but that's what I've learned so far.
Tell me, Ellen, have you ever considered volunteering at a nursing home or something like that, just getting right back into caregiving?
Well, that's actually a good question because that's one of my pieces of advice for people who find themselves as ex-caregivers mm-hmm. is to find a way to use the knowledge that you gained.
Yeah.
I'm not volunteering, but I have found other ways to try and use my knowledge. Now, it's still in process. I have, for example, started developing some books for seniors with dementia, or like in the early stages of dementia.
Right.
So these are simple books, simple as children's book, but with grown-up topics kind of thing. So one line
really?
Per page and one picture and that sort of thing. So I'm trying to... You know, I learned that the more you can use the brain, even when it's when it's already damaged, the more you can slow down the process and the more you can keep it,
yeah.
you know, as healthy as possible. So that's what I started doing, was developing a product. Now, I'm not all the way through it yet, so it's still in the works. But that's one of my pieces of advice, is to take the knowledge that you have and find another way to use it. Yeah,
that's an excellent idea, because with my mother, you know, I noticed she doesn't read anymore. She used to read her Bible all the time. But
yeah.
I would think that if there was a book, you know, like a children's book that was really easy to read, they would pick them up yeah. and start reading again. And it would probably slow down their dementia, because it's, you know, use it or lose it is the philosophy with that, I believe. But how soon before you're through with actually having a real live book?
Well, it will probably be a while. I need to find an investor or something, because I'm self-publishing, and I did an initial print job, but I didn't like the quality, or not the quality, but the substance of the book. Like, I didn't like mm-hmm. the feel of the book. It didn't
yeah.
feel substantive enough. And so I redeveloped it, and I printed it again, but the second print job was very poor. So
it's already written?
Yeah, it's written, and I have a whole series of books, you know, of ideas to develop, basically that work on the idea of using your memory. So the first book that I wrote has to do with Christmas, so it draws on memories of what is typical at Christmas time for us in North America. So somebody who in your family puts up the Christmas tree, who in your family makes the Christmas dinner, who, you know, that kind of thing. So it draws on memories that person would have gained for a lifetime.
Uh-huh.
And it allows with a caregiver to sit there and read the one line and then talk about it. So the one line is about putting up the Christmas tree, and then the caregiver can ask questions like, who was the person who got the Christmas tree in your house? Mm-hmm. You know, who decorated it? Who took it down? How long did you have it up? You know, did you have any special ornament? So it's things that there's no wrong answer to, and the person can usually answer even if they have dementia. And so your question was how long until they're ready. I have two sets of books that I've printed, and to print again, I need some money. So it might be a while. And then I have a series of other ideas that build on, like, things from the 50s and 60s and that sort of thing, when the person would have been possibly in their prime, 50s, 60s, 70s. And usually those memories are the longest to disappear, the memories from that time. So allows them to actually have memories that they can access and use and enjoy and strengthen their brain with. So that's where it is at.
Well, you let me know when those are ready. I want to put them in my mother's hands.
Okay.
We got a little off what?
We got a little off topic, I think.
No, that's on topic. We're all about caregiving and what you're doing, because we're coming into the fact, you know, do you have any advice for caregivers? And then we'll talk about, you know, how people can get a hold of you, and because you have a website or a Facebook page, so you're already taking care of getting back into the caregiver business, so to speak. And you know, it's not only volunteering, but people can actually apply for a job at a professional caregiver place where you actually get paid for caregiving.
Yes.
I know caregivers are in great demand, especially good ones, because there's lots of bad ones out there. So, yeah, you have a lot of options open to you. So let me ask you, as we approach the end of the program, any advice, last-minute advice for caregivers? And then, I'm sorry, you already answered that one. Basically, let's talk about how someone can get a hold of you and what you actually do online. What if someone goes to your website or to your Facebook page, can they expect, and how's it going to help them?
Okay, well, the Facebook page is facebook.com caregiver connection, and
connection
is spelled with an X in the middle. So
how do you do that? Spell it.
So CONNEXION.
Connection.
I didn't think when I created it about how hard it is to think about that, you know, putting that in online and stuff. So I apologize for that. But
The good news is you can always change a Facebook page. You couldn't used to, but now you can very easily change your Facebook page if you want to later decide to spell it differently or whatever.
Okay, I didn't know that. So I have the Facebook page, and my idea behind the Facebook page is to provide some information, but it's not completely to provide information, because there's a lot of sources of information about how to deal with dementia and how to, manage the caregiving role and that sort of thing. So my idea with a Facebook page is to provide a place that the person can go for a tiny bit of respite without actually leaving. So there are inspirational messages, and there's encouragement, and there's ideas for how to look after yourself and how to keep going. And there's people post their challenges, and other people provide ideas. And so it's just a place that we can go and connect with each other and have basically a brief moment of respite without actually having to leave.
So if they have a 15-minute break while, you know, their loved one is on the potty or something, they can escape to their computer and get a fix of support, of advice, or just inspirational messages, et cetera, stuff like that. Cool. That's wonderful. Do you have a web page yet, or is it just the Facebook page?
I do have a web page for the books, but because the books aren't really ready for promoting,
okay.
I'm not really promoting that part of it.
All right. Well, I think we've covered all the bases, Ellen. It's been a joy having you on here. You've been a wealth of information, and I am so glad that you explained how you became a car thief and a caregiver, because I think we all need to be car thieves if our parents have dementia. So thanks again for allowing me to interview you, and thank you to my listening audience for tuning in today and every Wednesday live at noon Pacific Standard Time or Pacific Daylight Time, which we're on now. And don't forget that all of our shows are recorded podcasts, so you can listen on the same link any time of the days, 24/7, day or night, as even this show. And they're also on our website, DaveTheCaregiver.com, and the short link, DaveNass.com, as well as iTunes and Stitcher, and all those links are on our website under the Uplifting Interview tab. And by the way, when you're on our site, please don't forget to take the quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout?, so that you can assess where you are in the burnout process. And get your free copy of my book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. You will be encouraged and uplifted by doing both. So until next week, may God richly bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.